Only a Game is a production of NPR and WBUR Boston. The program is made possible by your financial support. Please pledge online at WBUR.org.
For many years, Roger Clemens was known as one of the most dominant and dedicated pitchers of his or any other time. His record on the mound was magnificent. His work ethic was otherworldly. If you didn't believe that, all you had to do was ask him. Now in retirement, Clemens is apparently Barry Bonds White. In the ongoing inquiry into whether he used performance-enhancing drugs, he has been his own babbling worst enemy. In The Rocket That Fell to Earth, Roger Clemens and the Rage for Baseball Immortality, Jeff Perlman presents an account of the rise and fall of Clemens. Perlman begins his book with stories of Clemens when he was growing up in Ohio. At that time, he was not an impressive athlete, and when Jeff Perlman and I had the opportunity to speak recently, I began the conversation by asking him how it happened that an overweight adolescent incapable of throwing hard enough to impress the scouts became a great young pitcher.
Well, you know, there's a whole backstory to Clemens that's really, you wouldn't think, because, you know, I wrote a book about Barry Bonds years ago, and he was this guy who from age three on was just a supernova. And Clemens, you know, who grew up outside of Dayton, Ohio, in Butler Township, Ohio, as you said, was just a fat little, you know, sort of weeble wobble of a kid who, glad I made you laugh there. And, you know,
weeble wobble was just excellent.
But they never fall down. He was this kid, to show you sort of what kind of pitcher he was as a kid, when he was in Little League, his co-number one starter in Little League was the first girl to ever pitch Little League baseball in Ohio, Kelly Curzan, a soft-tossing, you know, kid. And Clemens was the same way, soft-tosser who inspired nobody. And he moved to Texas midway through high school, arrived at first at Dulles High School, where he played JV baseball, then at Spring Woods High School, where he was the number three starter as a junior, behind two guys, Rainer Noble and Rick Lucan, who would go on to pretty good college careers. And then finally, as a senior, he was the number one starter. But he still was unimpressive, and no one scouted him. The team was, I think, 17-10. His high school coach desperately, you know, wanted to help Roger Clemens get a college scholarship, but nobody wanted Roger Clemens. So finally, the head coach at San Jacinto Junior College, Wayne Graham, who's now at Rice, basically said, all right, we'll take him, and hopefully he won't be terrible. And in fact, Clemens shows up, and on one of the first days, Wayne Graham's assistant coach says to Wayne Graham, why'd you take the fat kid? That was the actual quote, why'd you take the fat kid? But Graham saw something in Clemens. You know, the main thing he saw was a guy who just didn't follow through. You know, he pitched all with his legs, didn't use his arms, upper body at all. So Graham, who you know, has gone on to be one of the great sort of modern college baseball coaches, tinkered. And Clemens' velocity when he was at San Jacinto went from you know, mid to sort of high-ish 80s to low, approaching mid-90s. And it was at that point, finally, that University of Texas, where Clemens had always dreamed of pitching, showed an interest in him.
Once he had transferred from junior college to the University of Texas, to what extent was Clemens allowed to call the shots?
You know, at Texas, he was one of many. I mean, you know, his co-number one starter with the Longhorns was Calvin Chiraldi, who was a pretty darn good pitcher in and of himself. But, you know, Clemens, it's funny. When Clemens agreed to go to Texas, the head coach there was Cliff Gustafson. And to show you what kind of cojones Clemens had at the time, he said, I'll sign with you, but I want to start the opening game at home, and I want to start the opening game on the road. That's the only way I'm coming to Texas. And Gustafson, who was this, you know, 60-something-year-old coach, said, all right, I'll allow it. And that was Clemens. And Clemens of Texas was a dominant pitcher, and that's really where he became the sort of confident guy you saw throughout his career at Texas, where he really got that mojo going.
John Turner, the student manager of the team at Texas, said of Clemens that, quote, his reason for living was to kick ass in baseball. To what extent does that explain the next 25 years of his life?
I think very well, actually. You know, there's a writer named Pat Jordan who I think is great.
And I agree.
He's written about Clemens a lot. And I actually start off my book with a quote from his book, A False Spring, which is one of my favorite books of all time. And the quote is, what would I be without baseball? I could think of nothing. And that's Clemens. I mean, Clemens sees everything, and this is what's gotten him into trouble and probably also what made him a great ball player, is he sees absolutely everything through the prism of baseball. And when I say that, I mean all four of his kids, their first names start with the letter K, symbolizing strikeout. When he buried his mother, Bess, he had her buried in a diamond necklace with 21 diamonds representing his uniform number. When he gives gifts, it would almost always be a signed baseball or a signed picture of himself. He really hoped that Jorge Posada would be his catcher for his 300th game because it would be such a wonderful gift for Jorge Posada. Everything in his life was about baseball, and not just about baseball, but getting into the Hall of Fame. I mean, a few years ago, he had this sort of audacity to say if the Hall did not enter him in as a Yankee wearing a Yankee hat, he probably wouldn't show up. That is definitely not a demand he would make today.
No, I wouldn't think so. In Boston, where Clemens began his major league career, former Red Sox general manager Dan Duquette took a lot of heat for concluding in 1996 that Roger Clemens was, quote, in the twilight of his career. But you write that Dan Duquette was absolutely right. Why?
He was. And I actually called it, it's funny, I call this book tour unofficially the Dan Duquette Redemption Tour. And Dan Duquette wouldn't even talk to me. But it's funny, his last 4 years in Boston, Clemens was a 40-39 pitcher. His velocity was way down. It had fallen from sort of 98-99 to 91-92. He gained weight. He was much more injury prone. And Duquette wisely made the decision that Roger Clemens was approaching over the hill. And we're not going to commit a lot of money to a guy like this who's not going to put up for long term. So Clemens uses this as his great motivation. You know, he says, to hell with Boston, and he signs with Toronto as a free agent, and he goes on to win these two Cy Young Awards and have this amazing career where he wins another Cy Young Award with the Yankees, another one with Houston. And much of that, you can't say all of it, but much of it was due to performance enhancers, human growth hormones, steroids, his relationship with Brian McNamee. So when I look back at Dan Duquette, and you see a guy who's saying, look, we have this pitcher who's 30-something years old. He's not throwing as hard as he did. He's not winning consistently. And he's not really that great in the clubhouse. We think he's, you know, past his prime. Well, Dan Duquette was right. 100% right. You know, 30-year-old pitchers are past their prime unless something fishy is going on or you're Nolan Ryan. And that almost never happens.
Roger Clemens is still denying that he used performance-enhancing drugs, but when you write about Clemens using steroids and human growth hormone, the adjective alleged never appears. Who or what convinced you that he was lying?
A lot of it talking to former teammates, most of it Brian McNamee and talking with different people associated with McNamee. And, you know, Clemens' side has done a lot to demonize Brian McNamee, and some of it well-justified. But that guy had zero, absolutely zero to gain by making this stuff up. That's the first thing. Zero to gain. I mean, literally, if you're going to lie about this, you're going to jail. Secondly, he was right. You know, he was right about Andy Pettit. He was right about Chuck Knoblauch. He gave information that across the board checked out. This is going to sound weird, but as a baseball writer who's covered the steroid era for whatever, most of my career, I'm sort of tired of saying alleged when it's not alleged. You know, I know that sounds dumb, but I really am. I'm tired of hearing this I never failed a drug test garbage. I can't deal with this anymore. You know, I just can't. I can't deal with it anymore. If you use performance enhancers, the lesson here from Jason Giambi, from Andy Pettit, is come clean, admit you did it, and you'll be fine. We'll respect you for telling the truth, even if it's, you know, late. That's fine. But a guy like Roger Clemens, where it's so incredibly blatant, just like Mark McGwire, I'm not going to use alleged anymore with Mark McGwire. It's obvious. It's blatant. We know he did it. Rafael Palmeiro, I'm not going to use alleged. There are just certain guys nowadays who we know. Jason Giambi never officially apologized for using steroids. I don't think the word alleged needs to be attached to Jason Giambi anymore, and I don't think Jason Giambi would argue that it needs to be attached to him anymore.
Still, Clemens filed a lawsuit against his former trainer, Brian McNamee, asserting that McNamee had lied when he said that Clemens had used these performance-enhancing drugs. Do you have any concerns yourself about being sued?
I don't, actually. First of all, just in the legal schmiegel term of all, for a public figure to sue for something like this is very, very, very difficult. Second of all, you know, I'm convinced he used. I have no doubt he used whatsoever. If Roger Clemens wants to sue me and go back to court debating his usage of performance enhancers, I mean, I would prefer nobody sues me, but it'd probably sell 8 trillion books for me, so I can't, you know. I mean, I just think it's ridiculous. Of course he's not. You know, if Roger Clemens, after all he's gone through, is going to sue someone, you know, he'll have a lot of people besides me to sue.
Of the sports writers who were covering Clemens when he was pitching for the Yankees, you write that they never doubted that it was his training and his dedication that explained his longevity as a power pitcher, and that they felt this way because they wanted to believe in their own ability to beat the decline that sets in when youth is fleeing or has fled. What made you attribute that mindset to writers in general?
Well, because I have it too. The one sort of regret I have about this book so far is when I talk about the media, I wish I had in the acknowledgments or somewhere put, you know, a little asterisk that says, this includes me, you know, because I was, well, it's true because I, you know, I was covering baseball and I was covering Roger Clemens. And was I suspicious? I definitely was. And I'm not trying to pat myself on the back. I looked at him and thought, this is kind of ridiculous. The Roger Clemens story, the real tragedy to me about this is he was the guy who wasn't supposed to be cheating. And he was the guy who was proof to everyone that you can be 42, 43, 44 years old and, you know, darn it, you can still do it. You can still outwork a 22-year-old, a 23-year-old. It was like an awesome Disney movie. You know, you can do it. The old guy who can still pitch. And it was a great story. And I wanted to believe that more than anything. because I'm 30, almost 37. I love the idea that a guy can pitch into his 40s. I think it's the best thing ever. It makes all of us feel great. Sports makes us feel younger in general, and seeing older guys play sports makes us feel younger. But, you know, you also have to be a realist. And all these stories that were written when he was in New York and Houston about the incredible workout and, you know, he's just a machine and blah, blah, blah. I feel like we never really took it the step further that we needed to, which was, well, what's allowing him to work out like this at age 44? Because it's just not humanly possible.
You, like many other writers and observers, suggest that Roger Clemens did damage to his reputation and his credibility when he appeared before the U.S. Congress. In the research that you did for this book, did you get a sense of why he even decided to do that?
Yeah. You know, it's a tough question. I was talking to a friend of mine who covers the New York Yankees, this guy Tyler Kepner for the New York Times, who's a great writer. And he said, Roger Clemens doesn't do introspection. And I thought, I think that's so dead on the money, it's not even funny. Like, his whole thing, from the time he was a kid, I mean, he was raised by his mother, but his primary sort of role model was his older brother, Randy Clemens, who was 9 years his senior and was like the, you know, all-time great athlete at Butler Township High School. And Randy Clemens' sort of gift to his brother was this belief that winning is everything. Not just everything, it's absolutely everything. You do not lose, you don't surrender, you don't give in. There's no defeat. Defeat is for the weak. You win, period, damn it. And Clemens carried that throughout his career, and it worked great for him as a pitcher. Obviously, it worked great for him as a pitcher. But I think when you always think you're going to win and when you always think you can bully yourself to a victory, I have to think the way he looked at guys like Elijah Cummings and Waxman and, you know, everyone else on the committee was, who are these pencil necks to frickin' stand in my way? Just the same way he was with Dan Duquette. Who are you, some 35-year-old pencil neck GM who never played in the major leagues? Who are you to tell me that I'm in the twilight of my career? You know, there was a point when Waxman made a point to him and Clemens started countering, and it wasn't really his turn to speak. It was really a phenomenal. It's on YouTube. It's great. Mm. And Waxman says very pointedly, you had your time to speak. It's over. And it was the first time I've ever seen Clemens smack down the size. And I thought it was a really sort of profound moment because it just never happened to that guy in his life. I'm sure he thought it wasn't going to happen on that day either, and it did.
Do you think now that he interprets what happened that day as himself getting smacked down to size, or has he rationalized his way out of that by now?
Well, I'm sure he's rationalized his way because he's a rationalizer. When he was pitching, if he gave up five runs, you know, whatever, he had a blister, or the defense was shoddy, or the other team, you know, was hot, or blah, blah, blah. It was never just, you know what, I didn't pitch well today. He just has a very long history of not pointing the finger at the one guy who deserves it, which is Roger Clemens.
Well, you say he has a long history of a couple of things. One is not telling the truth, and the other is somehow being able to convince himself that the lies he tells are the truth. And that comes not only from you, but from several people with whom you spoke.
Yeah, it's weird. The belief was he was always this sort of tough guy from Texas, you know, kind of the snarling righty from Texas, following the long line of David Clyde and Nolan Ryan and continuing with Josh Beckett. The guy was from suburban Dayton. My standard line is that's like finding out Tupac is from Palm Beach Gardens. You know, it's like, it's a big disappointment. You know, you're telling me Roger Clemens is from Dayton? That doesn't make any sense. One of the first things I read for this book was his autobiography, Rocket Man, which he wrote in 1987 with Peter Gammons.
Mm-hmm.
If you read that book, Roger Clemens was a 22nd round draft pick of the Minnesota Twins out of high school. Not true. If you read that book, Roger Clemens was University of Georgia and Northeast Louisiana offered him dual football baseball scholarships. Not true. I thought this was going to be my guide. In fact, it really annoys me because I have two letters telling me you made a big error in your book. And the big error is I have that when he was a boy in Ohio, he used to eat Blue Bonnet ice cream on his father's stepfather's lap in Ohio. And two people wrote to me, they didn't sell that brand of ice cream in Ohio. Well, I got that straight from Roger Clemens' autobiography. I thought it was at least solid that he remembered what kind of ice. If he was that specific about the ice cream, I thought he'd be right about it. And I understand. Look, I understand. You know, if you were to interview me tomorrow about my life, there are certain things I would leave out, obviously, and certain things I would want you to highlight. But he's put a lot of things in there that just didn't happen at all.
Given what's happened to various ballplayers who've acknowledged using steroids and human growth hormone, and what's happened to the ballplayers who have denied doing so, what do you anticipate will ultimately happen to Roger Clemens?
You know, if I were a betting man, I'd probably bet that he ends up going to jail for perjury, because I just think the evidence is too strong. You know, McNamee saving the DNA, whether it'll be used or not. There's just too many things against him. And I feel like if you're going to perjure yourself, do it in front of the local town board or something, but don't do it before Congress. It was just one of the dumbest decisions I've ever seen in my life. people say, oh, Rusty Hardin, his lawyer, must be a terrible lawyer. Rusty Hardin has a great reputation in Texas and has done many things well. I just can't believe Roger Clemens was listening to his lawyers. Do you know any lawyer in America who would advise his, you know, here's a great thing you should do, buddy. Lie before Congress. It'll take you far. It's a great idea.
A career move not to be denied.
Right, you know, good luck with that.
Jeff Perlman is the author of The Rocket That Fell to Earth, Roger Clemens and the Rage for Baseball Immortality. The book is published by HarperCollins, and Jeff Perlman joined me from NPR's New York Bureau. Jeff, thank you very much for speaking with me.
No, thank you so much.
My conversation with Jeff Perlman about his new book, The Rocket That Fell to Earth, Roger Clemens and the Rage for Baseball Immortality, will be featured in this week's program. I'll also be asking Tim Kirkjian which teams have emerged from spring training most thoroughly prepared to begin playing games that count, and we'll have a story about the dueling baseball stadia opening for business in New York this spring. Pat Forty will join me for some college basketball talk now that there are only four men's teams left to talk about, only two of which I thought would be there. And we'll explore Senator John McCain's attempt to encourage President Obama to see things his way, at least in regard to a particular injustice committed almost 100 years ago. So join us, and remember, you can always hear the program at onlyagame.org.